Hi, and welcome to the Data Engineering Podcast, hosted by Cynthia. I'm Jason Gould. I'll be looking after the discussion every week. We'll cover a host of topics like DevOps and tooling, programming languages, and strategies, and all that kind of stuff. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy it. Hopefully, we'll catch you next time. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Data Platform Podcast, hosted by Cynthia. It's been a little while since we've done one of these, and in fact, it's been so long, we have a new host, or new co-host. Obviously, I'm Jason, as usual, and we have Eva with us here as well. Mm-hmm. She's a senior data engineer here at Cynthia.
Yeah, hello, everyone.
So, tell us what you do.
As you've said, senior data engineer. Basically, I'm developing data products and also running teams here in Cynthia and doing the consultant work for our clients. Yeah, basic.
She's been super humble. She also does a huge amount of our architecture for pre-sales and all of that kind of stuff. So she's super cool, very knowledgeable, been doing this a very long time. So we're very lucky to have her on our show.
Thank you.
So we don't have a guest with us this week because we thought we'd introduce Eva. So you could get to know her on her own. But we do have a topic. We're going to cover cost optimization, or as most accountants would love to hear it, saving money.
Yeah, we'll see about that. How much we can actually save for our clients.
Yeah, it's a super tough topic, actually, because we talk a lot. I think back in episode like 3 or 4, maybe, Tomo and I discussed quite a lot about like premature cost optimization or premature code optimization. And I think it's one of those things that's a super complex topic because, you know, we all hate. So Eva and I were discussing this before we started to get us into the flow of thinking about it. And one of the things we discussed, obviously, you know, typically Cynthia works in cloud. So we were talking about cloud migration and cost optimization and how to make the best stuff, because you can save a huge amount of money moving to cloud, but probably not if you lift and shift.
Yeah.
And then we got into this whole conversation about, well, is it cheaper to pay the difference than to re-architect, and when do you do the optimization? Do you re-architect stuff before you move to cloud? And then we'd both decided, I think it was super complex and it depends on your needs.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Jason, on this. It actually really depends on the type of workload you're going to run. So it is case specific. And it is actually hard to say if, let's say, if moving from on-premises to a cloud environment, if you're going to have a higher cost than running it on your current setup, and when will you actually see some benefits of running it on cloud, especially if you are not really willing to utilize the managed services that are available on cloud platforms.
So I mean, and we can do a deep dive onto that one about, you know, re-architecting to use managed services and improving, you know, potentially cost. The way I sort of look at that is, if you look at how many companies wait sometimes, you know, many months to procure new hardware, then, you know, running on managed services in cloud is a godsend because you can do it like right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the way I look at this. I mean, we speak quite a lot about, you know, decoupling stuff and data mesh and all of these things that accelerate your development, you know, microservices and all that kind of thing. And for me, this is one of the big benefits because we speak about testing a hypothesis. And for me, when we move to cloud, you know, we're not waiting several months for some hardware to turn up in order to test a hypothesis that may or may not work. So the idea that, you know, even if we aren't using cloud services completely, we want to do stuff on-prem, for me there's still a huge amount of value in doing a hypothesis in the cloud.
Yeah, especially since you can get a lot of resources in instant. Exactly. Basically, you just need to reserve resources that are available on cloud platforms and off you go. Like, you don't even have to re-architect stuff. You can just lift and shift it as you want, but also have better have resources accessible to you. Like, yeah, you don't have to wait for them to come into your data center or anything.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, and I know that this is a conversation that Tomo and I had, going back maybe 3 or 4 years.
Oh.
On even if you're not going to go to cloud for your production systems, why don't use it to test stuff? You know, a testing hypothesis, not testing systems or whatever.
Do some POCs and similar.
And avoid having hardware sat around that you've ordered and then never used or whatever.
Mm.
So for me, I look at that, you know, time is money, time to value, being able to test hypothesis, even if you're not re-architecting stuff and everything else, I think that has a huge amount of value from a cost-saving perspective, just in terms of people's time sat waiting for stuff to be procured, procured, put live, made available, when you can do it in an instant in the cloud. So when do you re-architect stuff in order to cost save?
Oh, interesting question, I gotta say. It actually comes down to if you need to utilize the managed services that actually provide you the benefit of not having your servers running 24/7, which is usually the case when you have your own data centers and running everything on premise. I think this is the biggest difference in the way that compute is utilized on cloud platforms. And the shift in thinking in also developing your solutions when you are working with cloud environments. You benefit a lot if you know how to provision the infrastructure that you need for the work that you need to do and also understand how long it's going to run for. So I think like if you have, let's say you have a Hadoop cluster, and for example, you realize that you are not utilizing it as you could, let's say for 60% of time, nothing is really running on it.
Mm.
Having that same cluster in cloud environment with same resource allocation, it's just going to spend you way more money than it actually needs, because you can create a cluster for a specific purpose, for a specific job, and when it is done, you actually don't need it anymore.
You can deprovision.
Yeah, you can deprovision it, you can shut it down, you can delete it, especially if the data is decoupled from the processing or compute environment. And
so I know we do this for one customer who runs a monthly job to calculate some pricing. We won't say who it is or what even business, but which industry vertical it is, because it won't be obvious. But we do this for a client where we do a calculation once a month. We build the whole environment, do all of the price calculations, and then remove the whole environment. And you sit there and you think, well, that's, you know, 30 days a month that that whole environment's not running, not being paid for, not producing heat in a data center. You know, spin it up. When I look at that as well, I look at that optimization level of being able to auto-scale stuff. You know, if you're an online retailer and your busiest day of the year is Black Friday, well, if you're on-prem, you need to have system or hardware that can cope with Black Friday. Whereas if you're in cloud...
Yeah, you can scale based on the requirements and requests that are coming in. So basically, you have a lot more flexibility when you are in cloud environment, especially when you utilize services that allow you to scale up or down based on the actual needs. So,
So when we sort of look at all of this stuff, that whole auto scaling of everything and all the rest of it, and it's something I hear quite often, you know, when a company's looking at all of this stuff, and we have this same problem when we do quite a lot of proposals for people, how much is it going to cost me to run it? And you go, well, do you know what? Until you start using it, maybe we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you, especially when it is really hard for clients to understand the actual resources that are needed to run their jobs. And the approach that I, for example, like to advise them is to do a smaller scope, let's say a POC. Because once you have the POC done, you will understand the cost a bit more, and then you will be able to scale it up to your whole solution once it is moved to the cloud. Before actually trying it out in cloud and understanding how the shift in actual compute usage is done, it is really hard to understand the cost impact of your solution. So having a plan, especially let's say a migration plan in place where you can scope down your migration into phases, into pieces, it's going to be a much easier to also manage the costs.
So that was the other part of it, because we have this sort of, you know, amount of processing power available to us and time. And I see quite a lot with auto scaling. I have heard some really cool horror stories that people have said, I don't care how long it takes this thing to run, but because they've had auto scaling on their services, it's just gone, oh, cool, I'll do all of it right now. And it's cost me $10,000 instead of $100,000.
Yeah, well, you gotta be smart about it, I have to say. You can always limit the maximum number of instances, for example, that are going to be reserved. So yeah, and you need to be aware of certain things like
side effects. Yeah, consequences.
Yeah. But that is part of the engineering, actually.
It's understanding that and the impact. And I sometimes curious. I mean, you know, as an organization, we're pretty much cloud native. Mm. I mean, all of our engineers that we have here have either realistically only ever worked in the cloud, in some cases, some of the younger guys and girls. And then obviously our more experienced senior people, they've worked a lot with on-prem stuff, but typically we work in cloud a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as to if a lot of the reason that we choose, or people choose, not we, but people choose to, you know, I'm just going to use a VM in the cloud rather than managed services, because they're not seeing it as locked in, it's low risk, and I know what to expect from it. And I get the thing that then worries me is like, but what are you learning?
Yeah, I mean, you're just lifting and reusing the stuff that you already know and have, running it on a VM without getting the benefits of, let's say, running it on some functions environment, which would lower the cost drastically, but by running the same, let's say, solution and providing the same output, but on a different environment.
We've covered a little bit about the cost of the lower cost or presumed lower cost that you would get by using functions, for example, managed services and everything else. We've covered a little bit about the fact that if you're on-prem, you have to tailor your environment, your infrastructure to your peak need. Mm-hmm. And I think if I sort of go back, I mean, bearing in mind, I haven't cut code for a little while because I'm old.
A little while, okay.
A little while. It's a little while. I haven't cut code in anger on a project for a little while. And I look at all of the issues that I used to have with maintaining code base, installing systems, problems in installation, creating production outages. I looked at, you know, machines crashing, machines needing to be maintained, software needing to be maintained, and the complexity that you get in some, you know, of these big products and tools and systems that you put together. And I look at it and I go, well, how much easier would it have been just to click deploy and for Terraform to go off and build you a nice environment in the cloud and test it all and tear it down, and then the next thing it does, you know, it's a canary release or a blue green or a whatever. And I look at the the blood, sweat and tears I've given out in my career and the grey hair I have through going through deployment.
Well, I gotta be honest here, you are going to go through deployments on cloud environments as well. As you mentioned, Terraform, it is just a tool that you can manage infrastructure with. But someone needs to code it. Like, you need to code what you need to deploy and how these services are communicating with each other. So that part you're...
So it's not a panacea. It's still some effort.
Yeah. There's still some effort, and you got to understand all of the services you're going to use and to be able to build effective infrastructure.
So when I look at that, then, I mean, typically we'll have people that specialize in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. They're not just normal software engineers or whatever, because they'll need to understand load, network, you know, security.
Yes,
I noticed you were just about to security.
Yeah, security is a big topic. Yes, exactly. So it's a topic for some other time, but yeah, you're completely right. And especially when you move from different cloud environments, you also need to understand the differences between them if you need to move some, let's say, solutions and similar. So I wouldn't say that it is really that easy from, let's say, on-premises. You also have infrastructure engineers there, and they are also working directly with hardware. But here you don't need to have that aspect of working with real machines, hardwares. That is abstracted for you. That is something that cloud provides for you. And there are also a lot of APIs that allow you to communicate with different resources and actually create the infrastructure. You just need to know how to call them and what to pass to them, which is pretty cool in my opinion.
All seems like magic to me these days.
Yeah, especially when someone does that all and then some just clicks deploy and magic happens.
Yeah, and it's like, where's that deployed? Oh, I don't know. Somewhere in North America. Or like, what? So I, when I look at the sort of cost optimization, I think that there's a lot of hidden costs that people don't sort of consider. And I look at all of this stuff, and actually, I don't know. For me, it doesn't matter if it's on-prem or in cloud, actually. You know, the whole sort of dockerization of everything for me, abstracting the operating system away from your application, has been hugely impactful. Because, I mean, I grew up coding in the late 90s and early 2000s when it was all Java and let's not mention WebSphere. Where, you know, half the problems you had were infrastructure. You know, it was all like, well, you know, I've got a different JRE on this, my JDK is broken, my Java VM won't fire up, and it just turned into an absolute nightmare all the time. And I believe that dockerization and everything else has improved a lot of that stuff. I know we see it, you know, I mean, pretty much everything we do
these days
is dockerized of some form or other.
Yeah, there are a lot of layers of abstraction happening. So yeah, Docker is one of the technologies, tools that actually allowed a shift in all of this deployment and running solutions, programs in different environments. So yeah, well, building on top of Docker, let's say Kubernetes. Also great example. So basically, I think when we go back to the cost savings, I think the biggest cost saving you can do is basically re-architecting bits and pieces of your current solution that are too coupled together, are not really maintainable, and cost way too much in resources than it should. In that sense, re-architecting, re-engineering, let's say, to not maybe utilize cloud services, managed services, but for example, just decoupling systems, and maybe introducing microservice architecture, and especially Docker. I think you've already you're going to see a drastic change in
cost. So that brings us back nicely full circle to what we were discussing before we started, and we were talking about, you know, when is the right time to re-architect and everything else. And I keep looking at this, and I look at, you know, there's so many companies using legacy systems, and I look at I know when I think we've mentioned decoupling in every single podcast we've done, because it is okay. Probably the most important thing you can do.
So I'm on track.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
You know, it is the decoupling is the thing that allows you to go fast. It's the thing that allows you to, you know, if you want to get rid of a system, then decoupling or abstracting data away from that system means you can potentially ignore it until you replace it. And you can carry on with your whatever re-architecture journey you want based on the value you want to provide, the time to market or time to value. You know, if you want to do new stuff that's more important to catch up with your competitors, for example, or if you say, well, I want to save money, I want to decouple stuff, I want to make it easier to manage everything I have. And I think for me, when we look at cost optimization and saving money in cloud, actually it's more important to look at what journey it is you want to have and say, maybe cost optimization isn't the most important thing to me now. Maybe re-architecting this is, because I'm going to get a whole bunch of other benefits.
Yeah, exactly.
And then look at what journey it is you need to take. But I always go back to, you know, we do a lot of data mesh stuff and everything, and decoupling of stuff, event-driven architectures, is always the bit where I go, that's the bit that makes the real difference.
Yeah, well, event-driven and all of that actually brings a lot of different benefits. And as you've mentioned, maybe cost optimization shouldn't be the initial goal. But in the end, you need to understand that you're up for a journey. Especially if you're going to migrate your current solution and re-architect it. You're going to run it for years.
And potentially.
Which
actually sometimes is another problem, is we have these systems and we go, right, I've made it now, that's it for 20 years.
And true. I mean, you need to maintain it. I didn't say like you create it and then deploy it and forget about it.
But potentially that is actually an issue, that maybe we look at these things we've created as having, we've paid this amount of money for them, therefore they hold intrinsic value. And maybe actually we need to look at some of our software systems as being disposable. They fulfill this function now, they may not tomorrow. I need to be prepared to
exactly things change, and yeah, you need to be also prepared to change and change your system as needed. But what I'm getting at is actually maybe you will not see some benefits right away, just after some period of time while they're running. So yeah, it's kind of hard to pinpoint the actual cost and
Yeah, but I mean, you can also optimize stuff that's already running in cloud as well.
Of course.
Change,
yeah,
whether, as we mentioned before in our idea, where, you know, it currently takes a week to run, and I don't mind that. And when you set it off one night and it takes 5 minutes, and you go, whoa, how did I spend €10,000 on that?
That's optimistic, I gotta say. That is optimistic.
But, you know, it's one of those things where you can... For me, it looks like it's an easier job to optimize that stuff to take longer or less time or scale in one direction than it would be for a lot of on-prem systems as well.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think we've covered pretty much every single thing we could talk about on cost optimization from the perspective of cloud. It's a journey.
It's a journey. It's a
always
big journey.
A journey. What's the answer? Well, it's a journey.
It's like, for example, like when you want to understand your cost on cloud, let's say migrating, I sometimes feel like I need a crystal ball. Then I'm going to ask, how much is it going to cost?
Yeah, it's one of these things though, where it's always the first question you get asked, or nearly always, not the second or third. Well, how much is it going to cost me to run? And you're just sat there going, well, I could put my finger in the air, but I don't think that's going to do either of us any favors.
Yeah, exactly.
as you say, proof of concept, see what it's going to cost to operate,
and then scale it up
if your hypothesis is met. If not, then throw it away and
do something else.
Have a different one.
Yeah.
Cool. On the note of throwing stuff away and doing something different, I think we'll sign off here. So thank you, Eva, for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we'll see you on the next one.
Yeah. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.